Thank you for joining us at the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Please note this podcast does not intend to offer medical advice or therapeutic treatment for any medical condition for either yourself or others. If you have any medical or rehabilitation concerns for yourself or your child, please contact your physician. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the OT Corner with Mrs. K, a school-based occupational therapist bringing you a series of interviews and information on childhood development for kids with all different abilities. So get ready, get set, let's go.
Thanks for joining me today. Over the years, I have sat through many evaluation and IEP meetings as a parent and as an occupational therapist. The process is overwhelming and the documents can be quite lengthy. Parents and educators have the arduous task of making sure the strengths and the needs of a child are being addressed so the student can access their education. The parents are an integral part of the IEP team, but so many times are not sure what they need to be focusing on and how to even ask for what they want for their child. And even though educators have more quote-unquote experience with the process, they too want to make sure they are using the most appropriate assessments and delivering the message to the parents so they have a good understanding of the plan that is put in place. Well, this is where my guest today enters. I'm excited to share with you a conversation I recently had with educational advocate April Rarig. She is the founder of Rise Educational Advocacy and is dedicated to empowering students and families through her advocacy services, IEP workshops, and educational advocacy. April is a former teacher and school psychologist who brings to our conversation a wealth of knowledge and experience in the area of educational advocacy. She shares with us today how Rise came to fruition, as well as the advocacy services, IEP workshops, and group IEP training she provides. And stay tuned until the end of the episode for April's very special announcement. Please help me welcome April Rarig to the OT Corner. Good morning, April. So happy to have you on the OT Corner. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning, Jennifer.
So we are like at opposite ends of the country, which is so cool. And you have a wonderful service that I am excited to share with my listeners. I think it's something that is fairly unique. There's not a lot of you out there, I don't think, that have started something like this. And from my standpoint, you're the only one that I've known to do this type of business. So before we get into the nitty gritty, I just wanted to kind of get an idea of what your background in education is and how you became an educator in the first place.
I didn't necessarily fall into education. I grew up in a family of educators, so I was always around teachers. My mom was a music teacher. My aunt was a teacher. So I grew up in the classroom and I was very comfortable in the classroom, and it just seemed very natural for me to be in education. And in middle school, I volunteered with an organization and I went into a special education school because they had a lot more of them back then. And I fell in love and I said, this is what I want to do. But when I went through college, I was an undergraduate psychology major. They didn't talk about school psychology. They only talked about private practice. And I thought, well, I've always been in a school. I'll just be a teacher. And not just be a teacher, but I wanted to combine both. I just didn't know it was possible. So I became an educator, and quickly I realized as a new teacher, like many of your listeners might be teachers, they gave me the most challenging students, the most boys, and the most students who were really struggling my first year. So I did what I thought was right, and the kids who were struggling, I referred them for a special education assessment. I found the school psychologist in a closet, as many of us like to work in. And that's where we tend to get placed, or a dungeon. And I met the school psychologist and I thought I knew everything there was about IEPs. And sure enough, they told me, well, April, the student you referred is really struggling, but he does not qualify for an IEP. He is gifted. And the reason why he's not succeeding is because you're not meeting his unique learning needs. It's not because he has a learning disability. And I was blown away and disappointed and humiliated, and it turned me on to school psychology right away. So I became a school psychologist for 20 years. I worked in some really large urban school districts, and I worked in some upscale, very boutique small school districts in Southern California. And I loved it, but the entire time I was a school psychologist, my perspective was different, and it still tends to be different because I felt like that the process of IEPs needs to change and improve. And so I found myself as a school psychologist doing all these other things, combining my role of being a teacher, talking about strength-based assessments, talking about more than standardized test scores, and sitting in on the meetings. And pretty soon people were like, you know, you kind of, you know, take over the meeting and this is sort of different. Maybe you want to be administrator. And I thought, no, I don't want to do that. So after 20 years, I left the field to craft my own thing. And I realized I wanted to be a special education advocate, but not like the advocates I'd been before. So I created my own company and I developed my own curriculum because I felt like there was a better way for teams to meet. And that's how I formulated RISE.
So what, now, how long have you had your advocacy business in place? So when, you know, how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it for 3 years with RISE. However, I've been an advocate with my own personal self for 20 years. So it's been a new business and an old business at the same time.
And what are some of your successes with, you know, what are the achievements of this business that you've started in the past 3 years? What have you learned? What have you gained?
I've learned a lot in the past 3 years. I've definitely learned that when people come to a special education advocate, they are lost and frustrated. And most of them want to understand what the process looks like. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of three different avenues that I notice with every parent. And the first one is, I know something is off, but I don't know what's happening. And then the second type of parent I tend to get is, I know my child is struggling, but I don't know where to start. Many of them come to me and they're like, my child needs an IEP. My child needs a 504. I don't know how to get it done, or I've been trying and trying. And the third type of parent I get is they're in the thick of it, right? They maybe have had 5, 10, 20 meetings and they're stuck. And for one reason or another, the communication, the team, the programs of services, they're frustrated. And so no matter what kind of parent I get, they all kind of struggle with the same things that many people, frankly, on the IEP team struggle, no matter who you are, whether you're OT or PT, which is communication and documentation. So it really comes down to not so much the IEP process that needs to be reformed, but the experience, how we meet, how we work together, how we bring together all this complicated documents and deliver it to the family in a way that they can understand. And that's really what it comes down to, is reforming the experience by changing how and when teams communicate.
When you did you have like a specific idea in mind when you started RISE, or did this kind of evolve over the past 3 years?
That's a great question. When I formulated RISE, my mission was to bridge parents and teachers together. So the mission has always stayed the same, but the delivery method has changed. So when I first formulated RISE, I thought, okay, I'm just going to be more of a traditional advocate in the sense. And before I got my board certification for advocacy, I volunteered with an organization that helped families that couldn't afford an advocate. And I quickly realized in the first week or two that 100% of the families that came were like, this is so great, April, that you wrote this letter. This is so great that you told me this. How do I do this myself? They wanted to know how, not so much the what. They wanted to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I changed my kind of philosophy and moved it more into the guidance and the teaching philosophy of educating families and empowering everyone at the table. Because as soon as I formulated RISE, I had many psychologist friends, many OTs who came out and they said, April, can I take your training? Because that's the reality, right? If you've ever sat at the IEP table, there's not a lot of training when it comes to formulating IEPs, writing assessment reports. We get trained by lawyers and we get trained on what not to do and what to put in the IEP, but not how to put it, and definitely not how to translate what's done on the assessment portion and incorporate that into a strength-based education plan. So I really feel like that the mission of RISE is to work with everybody. And if everyone understands better how to work together, then the meetings are going to run better. We're going to have less due process. But the bigger issue is the kids are going to get the help they need. And the parents and the teachers are not going to sit in IEP after IEP and then just feel like, oh my gosh, nothing is changing.
April's services are so well thought out. And in the next section, we discuss the specific services that RISE offers clients. April also discusses some of the biggest challenges parents and caregivers face going through the IEP process. I was curious about the benefits of a professional educational advocate and how her services differ from parent advocates that are provided by some of the public school systems. So what special education advocacy services are offered by RISE Educational Advocacy specifically?
When parents come to me, I offer kind of three different supports. I offer advocacy services. However, my advocacy is very different from most traditional advocates because when I work with a family, I don't just go into the IEP on the fly. I first do an in-depth interview and what's called a record review. So for your OTs or special educators out there, you remember doing, right, an assessment. It's very similar to what I do, but I don't physically test. I just do a complete record review. So I look at all the previous documents and so forth. And then I meet with the parents and I say, okay, here is what I'm seeing. Let's craft an action plan for what we're going to do differently. And then as I do my portion of more of kind of the research based, the parents get training. And so I train my families how to read an IEP, how to do all that through our workshops. And so when I work with parents as an advocate, I am much more of a coach and a guide. And we use the time together so that they can get what they need quickly. And then they can learn the advocacy process on their own. I don't teach them to be advocates, but I empower them to understand the process so they can have a better experience. The other options that I offer for parents are what's called a file review, which I already explained, which is where they can come to me and say, here's all my documents, April, take a look. What do you suggest? And then I offer a strategy package as well for parents. The other offerings is just my workshops. And my workshops are great for families who can't afford an advocate, but they need support. My workshops are also for everybody else. So if you're an OT, a PT, a special education teacher, and you're like, you know what? I really want to understand how do I craft a better IEP? Or I'm tired of writing these really lengthy or boring reports. And I feel like my reports are just so in the dumps. I want a better way to write it that actually is going to take less time. Or I want a better way to communicate with my family because I'm so tired of just having parents be upset or explaining the process to them. So I, you know, offer the workshops and I offer the training. And then I also offer group training. So organizations or providers who want to work with me and have me come and train them, I can. And I feel like the group training has been really revolutionary because when I was a school psychologist, when I was a teacher, I wanted IEP training. I wanted to be able to talk to an advocate or someone, but I felt like there was this barrier and that we all had to stay in each other's lanes and we couldn't help each other. And I feel like that is one of the biggest problems in special education is we say this corner and that corner, and it's my thing and it's your thing. And if we're really going to work on changing things and making things better, we have to reach across the aisle. So that's one of the biggest missions that I have with RISE is to work with everybody because everyone needs support and everyone actually wants support. It's just about It's okay to talk to someone else, and it doesn't have to be threatening in order to ask questions or talk to someone on the other side.
So do you feel like the, I know you talked about the three specific types of parents that you see. In general, though, what I know they want to know what the how the process works. My experience too with some parents is deer in headlights. They don't even know what to ask half the time. And what in general do you see is like the biggest barrier for parents right now? What when they're learning the IEP process? I what challenge what's the biggest challenge that you see?
There's two biggest challenges that I see, Jennifer. The biggest challenge is how to communicate with the team. And the second challenge is how to document your child's learning needs. So the communication comes into play because many, many parents will tell me, and I saw this as a school psych too. I was talking to the school. I was telling the school that this was happening, or I was asking for this, but nothing happened. And so, in that process of communication, a lot of times parents will say, I was talking to someone, I was sending an email, and they aren't familiar with how to formally communicate, which is through a parent letter of attachment or formally writing an assessment request letter or responding to an IEP or incorporating what's called parent input into the IEP itself. And then the other portion they struggle with is documenting their child's learning needs. So when it comes to families who were first starting out with the IEP process, they'll say, I wrote a letter. They gave the assessments, but then they came back and they said, this is what's happening. And they didn't talk about any of the things that I was asking for. And that's because the parents weren't telling the assessors or weren't telling the team from the start, here is my child's strengths. Here's their weaknesses. Here's the areas I want you to look at. And here's the eligibility that I suspect. So, in working with parents, the two areas that they really need support is communicating with the team through formal communication and documenting their child's learning needs so that when they meet with the team, they're telling the team what they want and the team understands what to expect. And that really breaks down the barriers and makes it easier for the team to meet because everyone is communicating with that same language.
Excellent. Now, when I know you said there's different levels of advocacy that you provide, but what is like the biggest benefit of having an advocate for a family that, has a child that's on an IEP? What would you say the biggest benefit for them would be?
The biggest benefit is that it's really unfortunate, but when it comes to IEPs and special education, parents are at a huge disadvantage because everything involves a certain process. And so parents don't know what to ask for or how to get it. And it doesn't matter if the parent is a doctor or a lawyer, special education and IEPs in general, even 504s, are not really explained to parents. So it's almost 100% impossible. And so when you go into your first IEP as a parent, and I'm sure many of your families will say this happened to them, you're going into a meeting with 20 other people, and they usually give you many, many documents to review in a half an hour, and you're told to make a decision, but you don't know what the options are. So, unless you have an advocate out there, you might be able to get an IEP. You might be able to get a plan, but you're probably not going to get the kind of plan that you asked for. And more than likely, your child, if you do struggle, you're not going to know how to ask for help. And it's not because parents aren't smart. It's not because they're not educated. It's because the system is not transparent. So, you don't know your options until things tend to go wrong. Or you find out by accident. And that's not a way to be able to thrive in a new type of environment where, especially, that's very emotionally taxing, where you're walking to a meeting. And frankly, most IEPs that I'm in, I mean, parents cry. And so to make a decision with all that paperwork about something you don't know and hearing that your child is struggling and has a disability, it's no wonder parents get frustrated and they need an advocate. Or a support person to come in and say, here's what's really happening. Here's your choices. Here's what you can ask for because you're upset, or here's what you can ask for because your child is struggling.
In the school district that I am in, we have a parent advocate. The school district that my children, there is a school, an IEP advocate as well, special education advocate. What is the difference between an advocate like that and yourself?
There's a lot of variation between advocates, and then there's also what's called an IEP coach, and I call myself a coach as well. But there's so many different variations of advocates. So for those of your listeners who out there who don't know, an advocate is not a license. So when you become a special education advocate, it's not like being an OT. It's not like being a school psychologist. You do not have a credential. So anybody can call themselves an advocate. And so many advocates out there have all different kinds of training. And so as a parent, you need to do your homework in order to ask for someone who can work with your child. Some advocates I work with only focus on certain schools or certain areas, maybe an elementary school or a middle or a high school. Some advocates out there, like I said, are more of an IEP coach, so they don't cover due process or compliance complaints. They do more just kind of sitting into a meeting. So the thing you want to ask your advocate is, do you have experience working with my kind of my child with this disability? Or do you have experience working in this school district? Because if you want to work with an advocate, you want them to have experience and expertise. And so some advocates that I work with will say, oh, okay, I only do this or I only do that. So it's really important as a parent, you do your homework and ask questions, because advocates can run the gamut of specialties, of areas of expertise. Some advocates are known as being nice, right? So if you work in a school district, I'm sure your OTs and your listeners will say, yes, we know those advocates. And then others are like, oh no, they brought so-and-so. So they have a reputation that goes along with it too. So when you go to hire an advocate, especially someone, if they're local, you might want to talk to other parent friends who've worked with them to see what their reputation is. Because if you want someone who is a go-getter, if you want someone who's fierce, you'll probably want to hire that kind of person. At the same time, if you're a parent and you want to hire someone, you want to work across the table, and then you get to the meeting and you see everyone is absolutely terrified, you're like, oh man, I didn't do my homework. So yeah, what an advocate does and who we work with and how we work really, really can vary.
And to become a board certified educational advocate, is that something that's a national accreditation, or is that each state has a different accreditation path?
That's a great question. So for the agency that I worked through, NSEAI, that is nationally based, but they're an organization. So it's not a license. Again, it's not a credential. It's not state or national specific. They are a group of ladies who got together and said exactly what I'm talking about, that there's not a lot of alliance and there's not a lot of understanding and having a really rigorous process to become an advocate. So I chose to do that. And it's something that any one of your listeners can become. It was a rigorous program. I also was part of COPA, which is Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates, and they have their own certification program. But again, it's not required. It's not state specific. And so everything is kind of, you need to do your homework when you're a parent looking for the advocate to find the right person for your needs.
RISE also offers 4 different IEP workshops for families, caregivers, and educators. RISE also offers group IEP training, which is intended for educators only. April and I continue to discuss the benefits of this specific service delivery method, as well as how she crafts specific services for families, caregivers, and educators upon request. So, April, I really wanted to go dive a little deeper into your IEP workshops and your group IEP training that you provide at RISE. What are the different IEP workshops provided by RISE?
That's a great question, Jennifer. So when I formulated the workshops, I wanted to tackle the four areas that everyone struggles with at the table. And so when these four areas are not done correctly or they're not built correctly, I talk about building a better IEP is like building a house, then you can't, then something goes wrong and the team doesn't do well, the child doesn't do well. So the first course that I formulated, which is what almost everybody struggles with, is how to request testing. And that's going back to what we talked about earlier, which is where families know something is off, but they don't know where to start. So my first course is, how do you request testing? And it incorporates what is child find, right? What is the process? What is what's called prior written notice, search and serve? How do you write a really powerful assessment request letter? What is the process that parents can look for? And it really trains parents to look at their state website for eligibility guidelines. What is the timeline in the state? And that working across the aisle to work with assessors and say, here is what I'm looking for at school. Here is the testing I would like. And here's what I would like your assessors to consider. That really develops an assessment plan. And it really gets us the district to say yes. But the bigger issue is it gets the student to what I call IEP land quickly and also gets them a great evaluation. And that forms the ground of, right, how we build a better IEP through a house is you have to have a solid foundation, and that's through assessment. The second course that I offer is understanding reports. So many, many families and school psychs and OTs, we struggle with the reports. We write these really, really long reports, and we're trained to write them with lots of legalese. And then parents get these huge reports, usually at the meeting or the eligibility meeting, and they're told, okay, here's what the child is doing. And they don't know how to read them. And even if they have maybe take a class that's like, here's a standardized test score, they don't know, okay, this is what the reason for referral is, or right? Or here is what recommendations really mean. Or when it comes to looking at an assessment, we need to look at functional academics. And so they're not really trained how to do it. And then at the same time, assessors struggle. Right? We're told to write these really crazy reports and we spend hours and hours. And as a school psych, I would cry because I would come to the meeting, be so proud of this report I spent hours on. And then the team would look at me and say, thank you so much, April, and go about their way. And I was like, why can't I add this amazing report I wrote into the IEP? Or how can I summarize my findings in a way that parents can understand and really craft goals that are specific and targeted instead of these crazy drop-down goals that they give us to write. And so that's my second course. My third course has to do with parent participation, which again goes back to that communication and documentation portion. So in that course, anybody can take it, but it's really geared towards parents and it's training them how to write what I call a parent report, how to write a parent letter of attachment, and training them to know what to ask for and how to get it, without tears, without spending long emails, and making their communication concise, effective, and relevant. And then my final course is to the IEP itself. And so what does the IEP look like? How can I read it? And how can I read and write IEPs that are strength-based and really focus on all the aspects of the child's learning needs? So it really helps the team, no matter what role you play at the meeting, to run better and have more effective meetings that are productive. So those are my four IEP courses. And what's nice about the workshops is that they're online. So all of us are busy, right? Nobody wants to spend an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. So all the videos are short. They come with workshops, short fill in the blanks and all of those kind of templates that parents or teachers can get what they need quickly. So if you're in the pickup line, you could do a couple courses there. If you're waiting, you know, you're going home on the subway, you could do a couple things there. It makes it relevant and useful and teaches it in a way that we all learn, which is audio, visual, right? All those sensory things that OTs know about. That's the way I teach it, because when I taught kindergarten, that's the way that I work with parents, because everybody wants to learn in a dynamic way and nobody wants a like fuddy-duddy, you know, we all have been to those terrible workshops. We spent 2 hours and we're like, dude, what did I just learn? That was so boring.
This is true. And then you said the group IEP training is more, do you see that being utilized more by like educators?
Yeah, so the group training is for educators. So I've worked with BCBAs, I've worked with OTs, I've worked with nonprofit organizations that work with families. And so with those kind of group trainings, I can either do one of the four workshops that I talked about with you, or with one group, I worked with a group of paraeducators, and we talked about training paraeducators to communicate with their teachers and with providers in the schools to be more effective when they're in the schools. So my group workshops are really either customizable completely, they can be virtual or in person, but I try to work with everybody on the team, and then all of my parent, all of my group workshops. I mean, teams can bring in the actual IEPs or the documents themselves, and so we can go through and like really drill down. Okay, this is what it's saying on the IEP. This is what it really means, or this is what you can do to make your documents better. Because I feel like all when I was a school psych, I really wanted to get that group kind of working together. And I loved when we went to trainings together because we were just so isolated. And I'm sure your OTs will say the same thing. It's like the only time we got to work together is when you go to like these group trainings where you could say, here's what I'm struggling with. What are you struggling with? And so I like that group aspect and that group learning and that really comfort level of where you feel like you can talk to someone and not feel uncomfortable and not feel like you're judged.
I feel like too, with I don't know if this is your experience with running these workshops, we're evolving into this where we have less time with our students these days. There's more people on the team instead of having 10 goals on the IEP, working as a team, collaborating seems to be so important, but I feel like that's a skill that a lot of us don't really have, is that collaboration piece.
Correct. And that's why I go back to it's not just the IEP process that needs to be formed, it's experience. Because over the years, when I first started with my first IEPs back when I was a teacher, they actually wrote IEPs on a piece of paper and they tended to be 3 or 4 pages. And these were for students that were severely impaired. So over the years, there's been more special education laws, more litigation, more and more. So IEPs are longer and now more than ever, they're so complicated. And it doesn't have to be like that. That's not helping the child. What's helping the team and the child is to develop really kind of whole child-based IEPs. And so I go back to the strength-based IEP because it's not about giving 20 goals. That's not what the issue is. The issue is really targeting what the child knows, what they don't know, and what they need to learn. So more does not mean better. We all know that. And so it's really about figuring out what's the important thing here and having sort of a vision plan of mapping it out. So if the child needs an instructional assistant, yes, let's bring them in, but let's talk about a fade out plan. Or if the child needs a behavior support plan and the child is coming to the IEP, as I always encourage them to do, let's ask them. What's hard for you and incorporate that onto the IEP. So it's really about reforming the process and not making it longer or more complicated. It's about working together and working across the aisle.
Now, I also noticed that you mentioned on your website that you provide specific training services. So if somebody has something's very specific in mind that might not be covered in some of these workshops or group trainings, give me an example of like what type of what people are asking for, in those specific training sessions.
Yeah, that's a great question. Two examples, Jennifer. I've had several, either an educational therapist or behaviorist who've come to me and they said, you know what? I really want you to coach me. I really want you to train me on how to do it myself. I can't go and talk to the advocate or I can't go to a lawyer and hire a lawyer and say, you know what? I want to write better IEPs or I want to write better reports. And so I coach them. So that's a specific example of where we work together. And we figure out, okay, what is your goal? What do you want to work on? And I train them how to do it themselves. And they hire me as a coach to make things easier and better and to, play things off me. What do you think? What do you suggest? That's one example. The other example is when a group hires me, if there's an area that they really want their assessors to improve in, that's what I target. So I had a behaviorist agency who approached me and they said, you know what, we contract in the schools. Our providers go in the schools, but they're really struggling to understand what the IEP document looks at. Can you train in this, this, and this on the IEP so that they can write better this, this, and this? And so I did a specific training in that because that agency found that the providers were struggling and they wanted some training, they wanted support. And they knew, okay, if we go to the school district, you know, we're non-public agencies, we really can't ask for training. And so they went and they outsourced because they wanted their providers to have better training and feel more confident at the table.
Excellent. Now, you have probably, over the course of the past 20 years as an advocate and then 3 years with your business, what are some of your biggest or proudest moments, success stories that you have had with some of your training programs?
I think the biggest thing that I've had in the training programs is having parents come back to me and say, you know what? I did your training and I went to the meeting and I didn't cry. Or I did your training or I worked with you. I had one parent who worked with me and their child wasn't eligible and they waited like 5 years to get an IEP. And then they came to me and they said, it didn't qualify. They got a 504. And so I trained her how to request for a different kind of assessment. And she went back to her team. And the psychologist was actually reached out to me and said, you know what? I've never done this before, but I'm reaching out to you as an advocate because now I understand what the parent was asking for. And then they wrote like this, you know, report that wasn't that complicated and the child got the IEP and the psych was kind of prepared for this whole due process case and thought this and that. And then they said, oh, the parent just wanted this kind of assessment. And so I did it. And then the child qualified and like, actually it wasn't as painful as I thought working with an advocate. So those kind of stories where parents or providers come to me and they say, you know what? It was easier. It was simpler. I'm happier. I didn't cry. Those kind of reports, or even just a parent talking to me and say, thank you so much. You understand what it's like. Now I feel better. Those are the biggest rewards for me. It's not about getting the right services or whatever. It's about the stories and the experiences that I hear. And that's why I keep coming back to do what I do, because when people are happy and they feel better, I mean, it makes all the difference.
And then the kid benefits, which is the biggest, that's the end all be all, right?
Exactly. And having a child or having a student with, you know, neurodivergent child or student is really a lot of work and very stressful. And so many parents go through divorces, they go through, you know, loss. There is a grief process as part of it, and it doesn't have to be, but it's so overbearing. And if you're struggling at the IEP table, it plays out in your personal life. And so having a support person, it's more than just about the child, it's for you. It really is for you. And if you feel better and happier, the rest of the family feels that too.
Before I let April go today, I am excited to be the one to help her announce her big surprise. She has been working on this for some time now, and I'm excited for her to be able to announce it here at the OT Corner. Okay, so I'm excited to be one of the first people to announce your special surprise.
Yes, we're very excited. So we are going to be launching templates that are available for purchase. And these templates are going to walk parents through the process of writing a letter to request for an assessment. And the reason why I'm so excited about this, Jennifer, is that as a parent myself, going through the IEP process, I had the hardest time writing a letter requesting testing. And parents that have never been through the process, it's hard to write a letter. And then also, if you don't write the right letter with the magic words saying this, this, and this, you're more than likely your district is going to say no. They won't do the testing, or they'll do the testing, but not in the areas that you've asked for and not the type and the scope of assessment that's considered what's called sufficiently comprehensive. So I'm going to be offering these templates for purchase on Amazon. And this way, parents can get a very quick walkthrough with step-by-step, do this first, do this second. Here's the five-step method to request testing and to give them a powerful letter and give them the magic words that they're looking for so that the district will say yes and that their child can get to IEP land, hopefully on the first try. And I really feel like there's, when you look online right now and you Google, like, how do I request for an assessment? There's so much legalese and thousands of pages of what, but not the how. And so I feel like these templates will be a breakthrough for the millions of families out there that are trying to request testing. And for your OTs and behaviors out there that are like, oh no, we're opening the floodgates. April's showing them the process. The truth is that those parents were already there. It's just more than likely what's happening is that they're sitting in meeting after meeting waiting, or they've already come to you requesting for an assessment and you've had to write one, two, or three reports, but it never got done correctly the first time. So it's actually going to decrease your referrals because you're going to get more specific referrals in the right areas for the right supports the first time around.
Thank you so much, April, for coming today. I have a child that's on an IEP, and even though I'm part of the system, I know how overwhelming these meetings can be. I think your service is just spectacular, unique, and I cannot wait for people to hear about it. So thank you for coming today.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you again, April, for coming to the OT Corner and sharing with my listeners your knowledge and expertise in the area of education advocacy. I will be providing links to everything we spoke about today, including the educational advocacy services that RISE provides, as well as IEP workshops that are available, and the group IEP training. Just please note that the group IEP training is for educators only, whereas the IEP workshops and the education advocacy services are for parents and also educators and related service providers alike. So just keep that in mind when you're clicking through those links.
I have also included a link to April's website, the RISE Educational Advocacy Services, to the shop page where you can find the guides and templates that April and I spoke about, and you can purchase those toolkits yourself from that page. Thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful week.
Thank you for listening to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Feel free to join the OT Corner community by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you have a topic you want to hear about, or if you would like to come on the show, feel free to contact Jennifer at theotcorner.com. We would love to hear from you. All information from the show is listed in the episode notes. We know you can listen to anyone, so we appreciate you stopping by. Until next time, thanks again.